Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon. We want to welcome you to today's show of the American College Experience. My name is Jason Haynes. I'm the host of the show and have been talking college tennis now for about 2.5 years. I'm also the Chief Executive Officer of the UR Tennis Network, and as our intro says, we pledge to bring you as many tennis interviews as we can in a week's worth of time, and I have a wonderful group of people that joins me during the course of a week. I hope that you'll listen to Monday's show, which is the Parenting Aces with Elisa Stone. She just interviewed Nick Saviano, and it was a great show on Monday. And then this afternoon we had Chuck Creasy, who does American Tennis with Chuck Creasy. And Chuck was on the air, and we had a little bit of a mess up, and we'll hope that we were there to catch it live. And if not, you can catch it on the podcast. Chuck had Brad Immendorfer on to talk about the business of tennis. My job here is to talk about college tennis, which I love doing each and every week. Then on the weekends, we have Infinite Tennis with Bill Patton, and he comes on about 10 in the morning Central Time. And he always interviews some special entertaining guests, most recently Matt Cronin. And then on Saturday afternoon is Alex Chin's Minorities in Tennis. And so we try to give you quite a bit out there. We're working on some other shows that we always are interested if you're a tennis fan or a tennis media type person and have an interest in our organization. Please contact us. You can do so through the Blog Talk Radio website. Or you can contact me at jhaynes10s@gmail.com. I'm also on LinkedIn and other places, but we're always looking to give people a chance to interview people, tennis personalities, and find niches for the niche sport that we strive to be persistent and great at. So we hope that you've been listening in. The last 2 weeks we've had some great guests. We've had Tony Minnis, who just finished a two-part episode there on his status with the LSU program, and then Coach Kelly Jones, former professional player Coach Kelly Jones, and his job there at Furman. But today is an extra special day for me. I have been a fan of this gentleman's for a long time, since my days at Tennis Tech, whenever I first encountered him in his books. And recently we put him to work here on the American, on the UR Tennis Network. But I've never got to speak to this guy for an hour about college tennis, and today's my day, and I'm very excited about it. I've spoken to him on phone off the air many times, and he's been a big help to me and what we're doing here. And he was gone from college tennis for a little while, and he put his self back into the ring. And he's now at the Citadel, and we'll bring him in. That's Chuck Creasy. We'll bring him in here shortly. This man is very, very busy, and I'm just excited that he took a little bit of time out of his day today to come in and visit with us. Now, as usual, I try to bring across a tennis story that I've encountered, a college tennis story. And this week, this comes from UT Tyler, from their school newspaper, the Patriot Talon, which has been run by the students since 1976, and this is a great story. It's about their one of their players, university junior Chris Wooton. What's special about Chris here is Chris is 37 years old. Now, UT Tyler is a Division III program, so their age restrictions don't necessarily apply like they do at Division I or other divisions, nor Division II. They don't have any ordeal here putting a 37-year-old man out there, but that's beside the point. He's been playing Division III tennis for a couple of years now. He was at Mississippi College and in Jackson, Mississippi. And he played there his first couple of years. He showed up, and this is what's interesting. He showed up and weighing 245 pounds and says that he had around 50% body fat. What's also unique about this is Wooten now has slimmed down to his current weight of about 190 pounds is about 10 to 12% body fat. So I'm going to say that he's been playing quite a bit of tennis and getting himself into shape. He actually was originally signed to play a letter of intent out at the University of Illinois, but you know how things get, and they ended up getting married and had a child, and then did some other things besides tennis, bartending, managing restaurants, did so in Dallas, Mississippi, and Alabama, and then in 2007 he wanted to start playing tennis again, so he went out to be the head pro out at a place called Parham Bridges Tennis Center, and after that he decided to attend Mississippi College, and there were a couple of factors that helped with this. He claims that he had found God and it gave him an opportunity to find some perspective on life. But he said the main reason he went back to school was because he wanted to be a role model to his daughter. He wanted to be that guy that the daughter looked up to and one day say, I want to meet a guy that's just like my father. And it's just a great story. He had to sit out a semester there at UT Tyler and joins the team in the spring of 2014 is the way I read the story. I could be wrong on that, but he's got to start there in February. Now, Coach Bizot, who we've had on the show before there at UT Tyler, still has some pretty high expectations and says his work ethic that Wooten exudes is something that brings energy to the team's practices every day. The potential that he has to compete at a national level and to lift our team up to places we have never been is pretty high. There are not too many players that have higher expectations than their coaches. And I think that because of his age and his leadership, it really sets him apart from his teammates. And he wanted to make sure that when he got there that Coach Bizot understood that he was a player, not a coach. But they do share ideas, and you can understand that. What's exciting about this is after Bizot finishes his degree there at UT Tyler, he plans on getting in athletic administration, hoping to be an intercollegiate athletic director one day and find him a school where he could be at for 20 years and retire. So it's just a great story. You know, a 37-year-old guy gets his life together, still has a chance for those of you out there that listen. To play some college tennis and bring a great attitude to a college tennis team. UT Tyler is a great place to play tennis. They're very successful there, and we're glad that he's gotten involved with that. So we're just excited that it could bring about that story. So I think that we've got Coach Creasy here on the air. I'm going to try to bring him in, so just bear with us as this goes along. Coach Creasy, are you there?
Jason, yeah, I am. Can you hear me okay there?
Yes, sir, I sure can. I'm very excited about today. It's a day where I get to spend about an hour with you talking college tennis, so it's going to be a great day.
Thanks, man. There's it's beside my family and, you know, a few other things. It's the number one thing on my mind all day long, so I'm going to talk about it always.
Well, Coach, you know, and I say this to a lot of my guests, so there are going to be people out there that have no idea who you are, which in this case is really hard for me to believe. But can you kind of give us a biography, a background on you, and we'll start with that?
Sure, Jason. You know, this will I was at Clemson from, I graduated Tennessee Tech 1972, went and worked Harry Hopman's in New York, Port Washington Tennis Academy. I was very, very fortunate. There, actually, I got a $70 a week job in Amherst, Massachusetts, and I've often told the story, but for $20, I would have never been in tennis coaching. And I tell this story, you know, for a couple reasons, but the quick story is that Mr. Hopman, I had a $70 a week summer job in Amherst, Massachusetts, the All-American Sport Camp. I was one of 35 youngsters there working, just had graduated from college at Tennessee Tech. Jason and I, Mr. Hopman, about the fourth or fifth week came around, and he always asked some of the instructors to hit with his wife, Lucy, and that was a tough job at the end of the day. It's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. You were tired. You wanted to go rest, but he asked me on this one Wednesday, and I did my best. I hit with her from 5 to 6, climbed a fence and put the ball back on her racket and stuff, and here's the deal. Afterwards, I come off, and we're making $70 a week, and Mr. Hopman goes, Chuck, old boy, he says, we always give our pros. He called me a pro, Jason. Now, he flattered me. That was part of the bait. Secondly, he said, we always give our pros $20 here. And come on, Jason. In 1972, $20 is beer is a quarter of beer. So that's 80 beers, Jason. that's a lot of money. So I did my own Midwestern routine and said, look, Mr. Hopman, shucks, I can't take the money. I'm just honored you asked me to hit with your wife. I'm honored and flattered and so on, and shucks. I'm just doing my, you know, what I'd been taught growing up in Indiana to do, you know, not take something for nothing. And I did that. And the next week, same thing happened. Walked away that first week thinking, oh, what'd I do, man? That's $20. That's a lot of money. And walked away in the next week. Same thing, Jason, same deal. Mr. Hopman asked me to take $20, and I said, look, Mr. Hopman, I can't do it. I'm just honored you asked me again. I said, what in the world is going on here? I told him I wasn't going to take the $20, and he keeps offering me this $20. Well, that night I had a note on my door, Jason, said, go see Hop. Now, everybody knew that when you had to go see Hop, that was probably going to get canned. So I'm thinking, oh, my God, Ms. Hopman didn't like her lesson. I'm going to get canned here. So I went down, and Mr. Hopman said, Chuck, old boy, I want you to come work for me in New York at Port Washington Tennis Academy. And I was floored. And I go, whoa, wait a minute. I'm supposed to be a high school math teacher. I'm going to coach basketball. That's what I want to do. Grew up in Indiana, and he's asked me to go work in New York. This isn't in the plan. So I asked him if I could call my dad. I did, and I took a job. Mr. Hopman let me work there for a year. And at that time, you know, John McEnroe was a 14-year-old kid. Vitas Gerulaitis was there, a 17-year-old kid. Peter Fleming, Mary Carrillo. All these kids were there, and they basically dominated tennis in the East in the United States. But the bottom line on the thing was I got a year apprenticeship that I could never have dreamed of, never hoped for. And the bottom line, I know for a fact that this was a test. That's just the way he operated, Jason. Yeah. If I had taken that $20, I would have never, ever, ever been in coaching. I would have gone back and been a high school math teacher, and that might have been a great thing. But for $20, that would have been different. So anyhow, wow. The rest of it very quickly, I got to, then afterwards I went and did my master's degree at Tennessee Tech, did the best I could there, and I took a job in Montgomery, Alabama to work for about 7 months teaching tennis. I got a call out of the blue from Clemson in 1970, February about 75. And I got a call from Clemson out of the blue. Well, little did I know that the AD at Tennessee Tech had been at Clemson, was buddies with the athletic director there, and they were looking for a coach, and he recommended me. But that's another long story, sort of a Mr. Hopman moment, because I was disappointed I had not gotten a job at Tennessee Tech. I was an assistant coach for a year and a half and loved my work and my apprenticeship there again, but I thought I might be able to get the job, and I was offered to someone else. And I went back and told the AD, look, if the job ever opens up in 1999, just thank you for the opportunity. I've had 5.5 years of great education because of tennis. If it ever opens up, will you consider me? Well, he recommended me for the Clemson job. I coached at Clemson from 75 till 2008, 33 years. I'd say 10,000 practices I conducted, blood, sweat, and tears, as we all do with coaching. And we, back in those days, it was just meat and potatoes. We didn't have much fluff. I worked the kids hard. I believe that Mr. Hopman, as he had shown through so many years, that comfort bears no fruit. You have to do the work, and people grow in pride and confidence and in performance level if you work hard. And we pretty much did that and established a great reputation at Clemson for being a hardworking program, and little by little things came around. And so anyhow, in 2008 I retired, went to Thailand, took a job as technical director for Southeast Asia Tennis. I was in charge of 10 countries. The junior programs we set up a training center in Bangkok for the juniors to come in and train. Some of their national teams would come in and train. And really it was 10 countries, but only 6 countries were very active in tennis. And then I did seminars in 7 countries, coaching courses over there, which was a fantastic experience. I got to go to all the Grand Slams, there and a couple times to a few of them. And we had a young lady that was doing quite well in Thailand. She won 4 of the Grand Slams. First Asian in history to ever win a Wimbledon singles and doubles title in 2009. Nopal Wanalirchiwakarn was her name. But we got a lot of good things going with tennis there in Asia, and Southeast Asia was a fantastic experience. And then I, 36 weeks on the road, my wife said, enough, and I was able to get a position at College Park, Maryland, as a senior director of coaching and competition, and I was there for 3.5 years, as you know. And through the grace of God, I am back in coaching and an opportunity again to work with young people in a college coaching situation. I love my position in College Park, Maryland. It was great, but working individually with kids is not the same as having your team, Jason, as you know, and the college coaches out there. No, I just am at a place that is, I don't know how this happened and how this job came open, and they took a chance on an older coach instead of maybe just a younger one. But I'm trying to show them I have enough energy here, Jason. But I'm in my 3rd month here at the Citadel, and the Citadel, if you go to citadel.edu, folks, citadel.edu, this is an amazing place. It was started here in 1842, and it is a just a fantastic place in the way that it is a non-compromising situation, the way most military schools are. But the beautiful thing here, Jason, is that the kids can come through, and they don't have to take a military commission at the end of their 4 years. A lot of them, about half of them, go out and get a they go out, Jason, and get a job at one of the top companies or something like that, because every person here graduates with a minor in leadership training, which is so unique, and it's a fantastic thing. They have great engineering school, and actually it is ranked the number one public school in the South for the 3rd straight year, and there's a lot of great institutions in the South, but the Citadel is the trends. It is the Ivy League of the South, basically, and as far as education is concerned. So, kids can come here, get a great education, and they don't have to go into the military, or they can go into the military, or they can go into the military after 2 years. Some of them sign on to Army, Navy, Air Force, or Marines, or Coast Guard, any of the 5 branches, after a couple years or 4 years, or they don't have to. So for me, I have a great opportunity here to appeal to a big cross-section of youngsters who are just seeking excellence, and it is a fantastic environment. I'm so proud to have my children here and to be in this environment. I'd like to go as I don't want to just talk on here for an hour just without going in the direction you want, but I would love to talk about a little bit about the process or the evolution that I see these kids go through from compliance to commitment to being inspired until where they just really get it. You know, if they come here and just they don't get it and just try to dodge things, it doesn't work. This place puts a mirror, Jason, in front of the kids each and every day of their lives. And some of them wash out, and some of them, but the ones who make it are just, it's something I haven't seen, Jason, in a long, long time in the United States. We've been shortchanging our kids by giving them so many daggone participation trophies and participation diplomas and things. You know, so, but I'm just proud to be here. I'd love to talk more about Citadel if you have specific questions, but that's sort of the story. That's sort of the story. I'm a blessed man to be in tennis, to be a teacher, Jason. So anyhow,
no, Coach,
there you go.
Well, Chuck, here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about the Citadel first and go through there. And you've already answered some of the questions that I had from it. Let me ask you, how many students at the Citadel?
We have about 2,200 or 2,300 men and about 250 women. And, it made national news, of course, when the first women came in early 90s. But we have like 7 men's sport, 5 women's sport. There's great participation here. These women, Jason, they don't cut them slack. It's beautiful. The girls that come through here and become women are just, they're awesome. I mean, they do everything the guys do. And it's a beautiful thing. So, but we have about 2,500 students total.
You mentioned that engineering is one of their top degrees. What are their other? Why? I mean, and you mentioned the leadership. I mean, but is there another reason why a kid would want to come to the Citadel?
Well, the engineering is great. The business is great. You have education. You have a lot of different majors like all of the other universities. The MBA program here is also excellent. A lot of kids will come back and do their master's. But again, the biggest reason why people come here, you know, I heard, I'm big with quotes always, but I heard Kim Gidley out there at Air Force Academy. She's the women's coach at Air Force, and what a wonderful lady that lady is. And I was able to spend time at Air Force Academy, but she said this quote, and I think it defines the Citadel as well. It said, from the outside looking in, you don't understand it. From the inside looking out, you can't explain how wonderful it is. And, it's really, really true. From the outside looking in, people say, oh, it's military, it's too tough, it's this and that, and the things I'll tell a parent, I said, you don't have to worry about 3 months of steady keg parties in the fall, number one. Number two, you always know that your youngster's having 3 solid meals. Number three, they are always, always given the higher level to achieve. The king and the queen is always spoke to, Jason, in the young man and the young lady. They are never dumbed down, but they are also given the necessary help to achieve excellence, which is a beautiful thing and a beautiful compromise. In an arena, college athletics and colleges have been dumbed down now where I'm not so sure we are achieving the excellence we're after. But Citadel is also, I'll give you the quick recruiting spiel, Jason, about the 5 yeah. areas in recruiting here that I've always looked at. Number one, location. It's Charleston, South Carolina, the number one destination of tourist destination and number one town in America for the 3rd straight year, top 5 town in the world, according to a recent publication. Location, it's a 10. Education, number one school in the South for three straight years. It's a 10. Schedule. I am right now in the process. We have an 8 on a scale of 1 to 10, Jason. I have scheduled already for next year teams like Florida State, South Carolina, North Carolina, Alabama, Air Force, Army, and Iowa are coming here to the Citadel. We're playing a tournament with teams such as Indiana Rice, TCU, Louisville, Central Florida. We're playing 13 great matches. And, Jason, my schedule is about an 8. I'm working on a 10, man. So I'm going after it here. The culture, if you want to be a professional tennis player, Jason, you need discipline. You need structure. You need to be able to run your life by yourself in foreign countries. And you don't have a coach or a mom or dad or, the lifelines that you need. So what do you need? You need this type of culture. So I'm telling kids that I'm recruiting that this is the culture if you want to be a professional player. And then lastly, it's the people on the team. There's no pretenders. You have contenders, not pretenders, on the team, Jason, with the kids that you have. And there's no way to pretend here. So I'm on fire. I'm excited about it. I did not think I was going to be back into college coaching, and definitely I did not. This is a wonderful, wonderful place.
There's no doubt about it. It's a great place, Coach. Just like you said, you're situated in a great community. The respect's there for your school. It has a lot of upside to it, and you have a history of being within that region over there to attract a good athlete and then move on to a better athlete and then to find the best athlete that you can. Let's talk about your team just a little bit or your tennis situation. How many courts do you have there at the Citadel?
We have 10, and we have a beautiful tennis center that was named after Coach Don Bunch. Colonel Don Bunch was here for many, many years, and the center was named after him, and a Mr. Earl who was a big factor in helping with that. But Colonel Bunch, and we have a nice center, 10 courts, 10 beautiful courts right on campus. Our team, here's an interesting thing. The Title IX thing, which I always refer to as a very good law, very poorly implemented, was never meant to eliminate players from teams and teams from the map of college tennis. I think everybody will agree that. I think even people like Billie Jean King would admit that Title IX is sort of gone overboard with demolishing, a lot of – we've had over 400 college teams drop, Jason, in the past 25 years. Right. So the point is, a beautiful thing about Citadel is I can keep as many players as I want. My first 18 years at Clemson, I never cut a player, but I set standards. I said, the bar is here. You have to be able to do these things. You have to be able to do this much practice and train. The bar is here, and if you want to play, you stay, and you'll end up being good. And we had some wonderful success stories of a player like Richard Matuszewski, who started out 14 on the team and ended up being a two-time All-American and making it to 48 in the world on the ATP Tour. Ken Kinnear was number 14 on the team when he first started. He was on the JV squad, didn't get to play as a freshman in singles, and it got to 2 in the world in doubles, had played in 37 Grand Slams. So the point is with boys are usually late bloomers anyway in the United States, and I think one of the worst things that ever happened with Title IX was that they started this silly thing called proportionality, where they only allowed you to have a proportion of people on the team according to your proportion in the school. Well, I never cut a player for 18 years, Jason, at Clemson. And until the 19th year, they started limited my squad size down further and further till at the end, I only had 10 players on the team. And then Clemson is sort of out in the middle of nowhere, and I always felt like it was a location I couldn't overcome, so I always had 15 extra guys training, and that was a recruiting base. I'd have 15 hungry, used-to-be basketball players in high school, loving tennis now, that trained and got better, and they would step up, and by the time they were sophomores or juniors, they would be on their way. And when they took that away from me at Clemson, that was a terrible, terrible blow. That was probably the death blow for me, and it took the wind out of my sails, because I always believed that education and the development of players was my first job. I never thought it was just the entertainment of something. It wasn't the entertainment value. It was the education value of getting players better. But part of the thing that AD told me when I came to Citadel, he said, you can have as many players as you want. So I started with 23 this year, Jason, and I'm down to 10. I never cut a player. 13 have quit and decided that, you know, that they wanted to do something else. And people might away, right away might say, well, wow, are you just that grinding of them, or you just grind them down where they hate tennis? That's not true at all. It basically is an expectation of excellence that they do everything well, and that they do it and they go after goals, and they don't quit. It's not a a lot of people, these no-cut programs in high school are awful if you don't have requirements, because kids get participation T-shirts and participation trophies, and they can say they're on the bus, but they never have to drive it, Jason. So that's been a huge, huge thing for me at the Citadel here, to be able to just say, look, if you do the work, you can stay. And we've got 10 very tough guys that are getting better, and their tennis skills are coming along every day. And we have a great schedule, and I love it in the purest sense. You know, I'm teaching, and that's what is exciting to me. So anyhow, that's it's I'm excited about it.
Well, Coach, now as you these kids that you're able to keep on your team as they travel through this process, I mean, you've got to know that you're getting a tough-minded group of kids. Is that why you do it the way you do it?
Yeah. Well, the Citadel knows 90% of the work for you. I'll tell you exactly how it is, folks out there, and you coaches listening, you know this. Here's the normal routine in the fall at a regular university, whether it's Clemson, Georgia, Georgia Tech, Alabama, or any of the schools that are big-time athletic programs. You know, Thursday night is the party start. Thursday night is party night. Thursday night football, and that means parties downtown and doing those things. Friday practice is pretty crummy because you have guys hungover. Some of us didn't go to classes, so you're having to deal with that thing. Then you have Friday night parties. Saturday's the football game, which is about a 20-hour ordeal, and there's some parties and beers drunk there. And if you don't think your kids are drinking in college, folks, you got a screw loose, because you know, it's just part of what our culture is right now, to party, and the kids think they're going to miss out on something if they're not doing it. So there you go. There's 3 days wasted, and then Sunday, Jason, is sleep in all day and try to get a little studying in, watch NFL football. Monday you practice again, and you're mad half the first of practice because you didn't get the guys up to racing speed. And Tuesday's great. Wednesday's great, but then here comes Thursday again. So, Jason, I got 2 days of practice in that were really quality, you know, that were not polluted, diluted, and prostituted, you know. So, so pretty much it, you know, that's why I think that, you know, I have a huge, huge advantage, you know. I still got you on the line there. I heard some beeping. You still there?
No, you're good. You're good, Coach.
Okay.
Now, let me ask you, how's your fall season gone so far? Where have you been? What have you been doing?
I did not, since I took the job August 2nd, I canceled all the fall tournaments. And basically, we have been doing our thing for the last 100 days, or last 3 months. And that means the fitness, the way I'm approaching it as a coach, Jason, is, you know, you work on the base. The meat and potatoes are the legs first, getting perfect footwork and perfect recovery steps. perfect shot selection, them learning momentum control and what they're supposed to do. So basically we're meat and potatoes. And we basically only a week and a half ago started competing with our own team and watching very closely shot selection, what we're doing, and bringing the games along. We've got about 100 days. We just bled in our weight work that we're doing in the mornings now, 3 days a week for the next 100 days. Our running programs have come up. We've got now, out of 10 guys, 7 are under 5:30 mile. We still got 3 guys fighting to get it, but our kids are running between a 5:10 and 5:30 mile. They understand what they're trying to do on the court, and I'm going slow so that they know their bodies will not let them down, their heads will not let them down, and their hearts are locked in. I tell my kids that our goal will be when they play to, number one, take the opponent's legs away, beat their heads, break their hearts, and then the games will fall. Most people try to approach tennis from the stroke standpoint, Jason, of trying to work, oh, gosh, this guy doesn't have a backhand or a forehand. That's the last thing that goes. You have to take their legs away first. If you take a player's legs away and they start bending over and they can't hang, then you beat their head with your decisions that you make on the court. You break their hearts with the ability to endure matches. My goal will be at the 1 hour and 15 minute mark to 1 hour and 30, the game will be told there. It's not going to be in the first 30 minutes, first 45 minutes. So very quickly, I'm hoping that everybody plays against the Citadel will understand that it's going to be a long day, folks. It's just the way it is. It's going to be a long day, and if you can't end it quick, it's going to be a painful day as well. So that will be my goal. What do you think, man? Do you think I'm on to it?
No, Coach, I completely agree with that. And you know, a good friend of ours, Dr. Brown, he's all for the battle that goes on out there. And I've been having this discussion with some of the kids that I teach now, and it's a real simple concept that if you hit it in, you're going to win. You know, and the idea behind it is simply quit going for all these silly shots and all this other stuff, but make your opponent stay out there and mess up more than you mess up. I mean, I get that.
Jason, you know, the thing is the technology has made it to where anybody can make great shots. Everybody makes great shots. Very few people can play the game. And that's as simple as I could. Ray Brown is the most brilliant man out there in tennis, and you know that, and I know that, and those people who know him know how brilliant he is. But we're approaching it from the standpoint of the technical skills of the upper body and shot making. And look, everybody has a fancy racket that does a lot of the work for you. That's not where the game is at. And that is my belief and my true belief, not a hope, but that's. And I listen, coaching the kids in Asia, my girls that I work with and the guys, they're all about 5'4", 5'5". So, I learned so much about their, you know, how you win with your legs and your head and your heart. And if the skills, here we look at the flash. I think at Europe we look a lot at the flash. But that's not where it's at. That's not where it's at.
Coach, I really admire you. I mean, you went into a situation there where you could have followed the old standard here and jumped in and played, you know, 4 tournaments and tried to get to know your kids as the semester went along and their games and so on and so forth. And you just dumped all that and said, hey, listen, we've got a lot to learn here. It's going to put us in a better position in the spring whenever it means something here. How was this met? I mean, was the administration okay with this? The kids okay with this? Did that matter, or what were your thoughts?
Well, you know, I didn't, Jason, look, when I took the job in probably mid-July, my first job, day on the job was August 2nd. So I had about 2 weeks on the road to really think through it, and When you build something, especially that you want built well, the first part of it is you've got to dig down underground, and you might go down five or six floors. I'm always speaking in analogies, forgive me, but the word picture is if you want to build a skyscraper, you've got to dig down many floors below, and you dig out the foundation, and then you build, and nobody can see what you're doing. But when the skyscraper starts to go up, it builds, and they wonder why it stands up. Well, it's the underground building that you do that nobody sees. If I expose, there's two things. I wanted the guys to know what we're doing and why we're doing them, and I hate the word buy-in. It's not about buying it. It's about them trusting you, respecting you. They don't have to like you as a coach, but the respect and the trust have to be earned. So, you know, my first job is they don't have to like me. It's the trusting me and respecting what I'm trying to do with them, and they know I'm not into any shortcuts. But with that, Jason, I'm building the ground below. But also, nobody sees what we're doing. I told the kids to keep quiet. You know, loose lips sink ships, you know, from World War II. I said, you do not let people wonder what we're doing. I don't want anybody to know what we're doing right now. When we start out in the spring, I want people to wonder what the heck just blew into town here, man. What is this about? And it's going to take a while, but we've got a schedule that is going to take us to task, and we got to, you know, and we're not going to be status quo. We're going after it. I'm not going to be a team that just recruits kids from all over the world that have already played pro tennis and say, we're going to make a team, you know, try to make a team. No, we're building here. You know, the thing with college, Jason, is it is education. It's not entertainment. Nobody cares 3 months from now who wins and who loses. The point is it's about the training and the development, and I absolutely, from the bottom of my heart, believe the college system is our necessary tennis. We have prostituted it, we have diluted it, we have polluted it, we have done everything wrong in the college system to avoid the development of players. Jason, did you know in 1982, I always bring this up on my show, 1982, Jason, with 39 players that had gone, Americans that had graduated, gone through the college system, graduated and made top 100 in the world. Today we have one, John Isner. John Isner.
Right.
One.
That's right, Coach.
That is absolutely pathetic, you know. So,
well, and no one wants to admit something wrong with the system. You know, that's what, to me, that's what's aggravating about the whole mirage here that's put out there that college tennis is good for pro tennis. You know, you just don't have the numbers to support that idea. And you know, with the male player maturing, pro player maturing later and getting their titles. I mean, it just seems that the American college system should be a minor league playground for professional tennis, and we're not getting that.
Jason, it always was. It always was until 1991. Now think back. Even into 60-70, Chuck McKinley played at Trinity, then he won Wimbledon. The Dennis Ralstons played at Southern Cal. He got on a plane, played NCAA, got on a plane, played Wimbledon. All through the 80s, we'd have 30 or 40 players that would get their training in college, American players, and then go out and dominate world tennis. And it aggravates me that people say, oh, well, the Asians weren't playing, the Czechs weren't playing, and all this. And no, look, it's been dumbed down. In 1991, what happened, Jason, was that this is when they put all of the people. Regulations cripple our developmental process. I don't, just like No Child Left Behind will cripple every elementary school out there and cripples people from innovation and hunger, these regulations by the NCAA in 1991, where you could only practice 24 weeks a year, 144 days a year. Oh, by the way, you can't ever practice more than 20 hours a week. By the way, 25 matches a year? Now, give me a break. Baseball, Jason, plays 66 match, 66 ball games. Tennis plays 25 matches a year? Give me a break. So what happened in 1991 was all the coaches go, whoops, well, we can't develop players, folks, so we better recruit them. We better import them. So they went to 100 different countries and got the top 10 players from 100 different countries and brought them to USA. And I'm not against foreign players at all, but I'm definitely against professional players playing in college. And we have had that for years and years and years. And I am definitely against the 26-year-old kid playing college, which used to happen a lot. And we just need a limit, like they have in junior college, of two international players per team. And that's what should happen. But I'm going to make this point, Jason, and people don't understand this. But it's not just in men's. In men's tennis, with all the international students, it's been very easy to drop 300-and-some teams because athletic directors, if they're dropping kids and the parents aren't complaining, it's easy to drop tennis when funds get tough. But here's the deal. Title IX was not set up to protect women from France and Asia and Australia and different places, was it? Was Title IX
No.
set up to protect? It was set up to protect the United States of America girls. And it's not that we don't embrace some of the internationals. I work for Harry Hopman. Look at what Dennis Vandermeer, as a South African, contributed. Look at some of the contributions that internationals have made here. It's not it. It's the fact that, again, diluted, polluted, and so on, we basically have taken away that stepping stone opportunity from every one of our American kids. And the top 50, we're not talking about. They'll always have an opportunity. But 50 on down, they have to compete against 100 different countries. And here's the dirty little secret about recruiting, Jason. And I bet none of your coaches have said this. But the dirty little secret about recruiting is that if I recruited or a coach recruits somebody from a country halfway around the world, I have no accountability. If the kid doesn't pan out, we can just say, oh, I made a mistake, bad kid. If the kid pans out, we look like a hero. But if I recruit somebody from South Carolina or somebody from Savannah, Georgia, or somebody from Atlanta, I've got pressure now that I got to do a job. So that's the dirty little secret why coaches bail out a lot of times and they'll get an international student. Now, everybody, I've had international students, Jason, and I wanted to make the point it is not something against international students, but we have this rule in 1991 plus the influx has caused the influx of international students to dominate all of the scholarships and all the positions on our team. It's taken away from the opportunity of our kids in the USA. Finally, kids are wising up. They're saying, boy, if it's that hard to get a tennis scholarship, I better go into, you know, baseball or basketball or something else. You know, so that's a big, big problem. We're finally getting the fruit or the non-fruit of our labor. You know, and we got a problem. We got a problem.
Well, Coach, you're not going to get any sort of argument from me. I mean, at the community college level, we had to develop players. We had to take the players that nobody else wanted, and that's what we did, and we made them successful. We won national titles. We made them All-Americans. So I just don't buy into the argument that you can't find players that can grow into a certain spot. I mean, 4, 5, and 6, all through the college level, those should definitely be American players. Because of desire, those kids, once given an opportunity, will showcase that and step up to the top. But you know, I realize that you can't find a 1 and 2. That's hard to find on the American side, but they're out there. You just got to know where to look for them. You know, and the other thing I wanted to mention here is I completely agree with you that we have too many used car salesmen in the college recruiting world. It's not really college coaching anymore. It's just college recruiting. And, you know, if just like you said, if the number 10 player from Ecuador doesn't work out better than, you know, the 40th ranked player in Georgia, I can go and just ship that kid back to Ecuador, no problems, no questions asked. And that's, man, that just is an irritating part in all this.
Right on mark. Right on mark. Yeah. So
let me ask you, Coach, as you travel through this, and your roster is pretty heavy laden with Carolina kids, whether they be North Carolina, South Carolina, is that your intention, or are you going to kind of expand this reach nationally? What are your plans there?
Well, I'll recruit the whole United States because this is, and I will recruit South Carolina and the South very, very hard, and I'll recruit the whole United States. And I realize that, I'll have to work hard and develop players, and but my goals are high. I didn't come here in any way, shape, or form for a retirement job or just to say, hey, it's a nice place for my family to live. I'm going to go after it, and just as I did at Clemson. And we will be respected. The only thing I promised the AD is that we will be respected and people will know we're doing it in an honorable way, within a year or very soon. And and I said winning will take care of its place as we do that. So I'm going to go after, answer your question, Southern and U.S. players first, and we have actually a couple international boys on our team that are tremendous young men, tremendous, and I will do everything I can to help them to, complete their education and prosper here in tennis. I'm very locked into helping their lives, as I have any of the international kids out of Clemson, but that doesn't change my belief that every school will only have a limit of two per team. I will always believe that.
Yeah, I agree with that too, Coach. Now let me ask you, I mean, you've been doing your show for a while, and when we started that whole ordeal, it was to help search with some of the issues that are going on with American tennis. So let me ask you, I mean, in your experience so far, what direction is American tennis headed?
Well, Jason, we've got a few civil wars going on, as you know. One of them is in the USTA, the civil war in the USTA. I'll tell you, you could call it a revolution, a civil war, or whatever, but it stems from the same thing with the USTA as it does the civil war we have going on in college tennis right now. We have a civil war going on with the format and people rebelling and breaking out. We recently have started an organization called the MDTA, the Men's Division I Tennis Association, that is all men D1 coaches that have believed that their voice is not being heard. It's too diluted. From the premise, just like our government nationally, we need states' rights, we need divisional rights. As far as in the ITA, you have D1, D2, D3, NAI, and junior college, men and women's, that's 10 different divisions. Every one of those organizations should have their own association that fights for their own needs. So the MDTA is doing that. We expect a coaches poll to come out very soon, as well as that will, piggyback the ITA polls and things, but we're going to have a coaches association poll. But that I wanted to say that because we call the civil war going on. The civil war with college tennis is over the scoring system right now. The scoring system has always been traditionally what we use, and for whatever reason it has been bastardized, which is a tough word, but it's truthful, in the past so many years. The 10-point tiebreaker for the third set is not a rule of tennis. It really hurts development for many, many reasons. No ad scoring is not a rule of tennis. No, it's not a rule of tennis. 8-game pro sets are not a rule of tennis. They should not be used. Recently, the NCAA got together with some of the athletic directors, and they have brought forward this format of they want to play a dual match being singles only, and if you tie 3-3, you play a 10-point tiebreaker to decide. And it's just like, that would be like stopping a football game at halftime and saying, hey, whoever's ahead wins. It's just absolutely absurd. And it's the very, very interesting thing is that they have bought, the USTA with the NCAA, they have bought airtime late at night on ESPN and some things. Of the 10 matches that they have tried to put on, several of these have declined and said, we do not want to play this scoring system because it causes teams to be upset. And, you know, why would we want a national stage with when we only get to play to halftime or play arena football type thing? The other thing is the ITA came up with the thing they're calling the Bullwinkle system. A lot of the coaches call it the Bullwinkle system. And what it is, Jason, it's in, they said, well, we've got a match. They came up with a way of shortening the match by saying you only play to five games and you play one ad. In other words, instead of no ad, you play one ad. Well, how in the world are people going to understand that? And so people are calling it the Bullwinkle system, and people are just rebelling like crazy against it. So we have those things going on with the MDTA, and we are a fractured group. It's like our government out there in many, many ways. The USTA has had this ongoing battle with the green ball thing and the 10 and under program, and Dr. Ray Brown has been so eloquent in the way that he has brought so many things to the front. But the bottom line is it will not be united. It cannot be united because it's being jammed down people's throats. I've always said with that, Jason, that even when you invented sliced bread, you still allowed people to cut their own. And it doesn't matter if it's a good idea. They're jamming it down people's throats and mandating it. And innovation only happens through the freedom to try new things. And the USTA is, they can't help themselves. These are all good people. They can't help themselves as a bureaucracy. Bureaucracies just get in their own way over and over and over again, whether it's the NCAA, the ITA, the USTA, and all these organizations. We got too many Barneys running Mayberry with computers, Jason, to be blunt.
Yeah, Coach, I can't figure out how the USTA got involved with tennis, and the ITA should have stepped in and said, quit messing with our sport. We have a survey here that says our coaches don't want you messing with our sport. NCAA, we notice that you're not messing with football. We notice that you're not messing with basketball or baseball. Why are you messing with our sport? And that's where the leadership there at the ITA, from where I stand, has been real disappointing, because they have been in the room, as I understand it, in some of these committee meetings, but they have not had a voice. And I thought that's what they were there for, was to be the voice of the Intercollegiate Tennis Association. And so whenever you do not speak up, you know, and you and I both know that a simple electronic survey could have been put out to say, are you in favor of this format or are you not in favor of this format? Yes or no, just like you did in grade school when you're asking Jenny out, and they would have had the results probably within an hour, because I know that the coaches are distressed about this situation. But there isn't anything happening. And I also know that this was for TV. You know, this was for those select groups of colleges out there. Let's just put it out there, the USCs, the Stanfords, the University of Texas, these people that have what they believe is going to be a following for college tennis. And it's not going to work out. I mean, and you're 90% of that population inside Division I tennis wants to play tennis. You know, they don't want to play TV tennis.
Jason, everything you said is so right on. Isn't that interesting that the ITA didn't step? Well, that's part of the reason we formed the MDTA, the Men's Division I Tennis Association, is because the fight, it's just like, you know, when they drop a sport, one of the men's 400 teams, all we've been doing is writing a letter. You know, writing a letter, please don't do this. That's not the way you get them to stop dropping sports. You know, and, you know, it's so aggravating that we have not done enough to prevent these teams from being dropped. But now this thing, 2 years ago, a year ago, about 18 months ago, the ITA or the NCAA tried to, let's get it right, the NCAA tried to come out with a format. There were 10,000 signatures. 10,000
Oh, no. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we had the Coach Creasy drop off there. I'm sure it has to do with his cell phone connection. We'll see if he'll call right back and finish his thought on the matter. And until he gets back on here, we want to just hang out and listen to me speak for a little bit. You know, we're talking about this college tennis situation and just the leadership that's out there and what's been happening, and we're not real sure if there's going to be a step up by the leadership to resolve this fact and of the matter. And it doesn't seem like that the USTA is listening. It doesn't seem like the NCAA is listening. It doesn't seem like the ITA is listening to their constituents. And we're just sad to hear that, sorry to hear that, and hope that that gets changed. We look forward to that process in the future, and them changing things, not for TV tennis, but for tennis, the benefits of tennis in general. So we are sorry there. It looks like Coach Creasy got cut out. I don't know if they'll let him back in because of our situation here with Blog Talk Radio. We've gone over the hour, and we are trying to get him back in here, but I just don't know if they're going to let that happen. So, Coach Creasy, we're sorry about that. You know, you owe us a time in the future, and you're going to have to come back on the air and finish your thoughts. I know there are going to be a lot of people out there that are disappointed we didn't get to finish that. You know, I'm going to go ahead and let you know that if you want to get in touch with Coach Creasy, if you have a recruit for him, you have more questions about the Citadel, you can contact him at C. Creasy, that's C. Kriese at citadel.edu, and make sure that you get in touch with him there. And we look forward to having you back into the studio next week and listening to more talk about college tennis. Thanks so much for coming on today. We appreciate it. Bye-bye.